Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
Police look for the woman who is responsible for the acid-throwing attack. Cops are going to crack down on drunk drivers over Labor Day yet again. And a man named Butts is arrested for the murder of a man named Boob.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse, ideological screed, and ill-concealed bathroom humor will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, September 3rd, 2010. Vancouver detectives released a sketch of a woman suspected of tossing a cup of acid on another woman earlier this week. Bethany Storrow, 28, was on her way to a Vancouver Starbucks Monday when a stranger approached her, engaged her in conversation, and threw a cup of liquid on her face. Unfortunately, the doctor said fortunately, she was wearing sunglasses, so her eyes were not injured. Storrow's family said the attacker is a black woman in her late 20s with a medium build and a ponytail. They said she wore a green shirt and khaki shorts, and they've released a sketch, which is not actually a sketch so much as it's one of those identikit things that the cops use where they cut and paste features.
Well, it's like one of those magic monster makers you had when you were a kid where you would have a plate that was the sort of the thorax and then a plate that was the eyes and then a plate that was the pants.
Right.
And then you would you'd sort of rub the crayon over it and then you would say, look, it's the creature from the Black Lagoon with Superman's head. It's just like that.
So this may be a somewhat accurate representation of this woman's face, but if it's true, she has giant eyes that are way too big for her head, like a gray alien.
My God, there's a race of insectoid overlords who are throwing acid on our citizens. Something must be done! You're right. She does look like she ought to be looking in the window of Art Bell's basement late at night, sort of tapping on the glass and waiting to probe him in a most unpleasant fashion.
Someone called Clyde Lewis. He might know who this woman is.
Here's the thing about this, and I think I speak for everybody here. Did you ever any sort of a cop show, or you'll watch America's Most Wanted, or you just see an article like this, and you think to yourself, there is no way that I would ever be able to describe what my attacker looked like if I were, especially if somebody had just, thrown acid on me. I can barely remember what you look like when I go home at the end of the day, and that's not because you're unmemorable. It's because I got a tiny brain, and I'm already busy thinking about pornography, and so it's just like I can barely remember what I had for breakfast by the time I get here. The idea that I would be able to piece together the facial features of somebody, especially if it's just one of those things where it's like a guy, I don't know, was running out of a bank and then he went and got into his Le Car and sped away. I guess I might remember a guy who got into a Le Car, but you know what I mean? Where they say, well, no, he had bushier eyebrows. No, and the left eye was slightly raised and then his mouth turned down at the corners and he had one tooth that was chipped in the front. And you're going, you're making that up. There's no way.
You have no idea.
But then whenever they arrest the guy, it turns out to look exactly like the composite sketch, which is amazing.
Especially since so often things happen and they ask people who were there, multiple people, and it's like, he was a black man. No, he was Hispanic. No, he was a midget. No,
right.
He had a wooden leg. And it's like no one can actually agree on what the guy actually
But then
looked
nearly
like.
Without exception, whenever they nail the guy, he ends up looking exactly like the composite sketch, which makes me wonder if maybe then what they always do is that if they end up doing the, what is the, was it... was it NYPD Blue or something where they had the whole episode that was about, I don't know, they had a guy in the interrogation room and they were hypnotizing him, trying to get the, trying to retrieve from his subconscious his stored memories of the attack. Anyway, I'm just saying that I will be a terrible witness if at some point, because you never made a witness to a crime. Like, you've never had to talk to the cops about
it. I've talked to the cops about things, but I've never had to do that specifically.
No. I'm telling you right now that I'm going to be no help at all. There's going to be no point in interviewing me. It's going to be a waste of everybody's time.
I would like to say, though, just for the record right now, though, I am actually kind of glad that you have no memory of what my face looks like when you're at home thinking about pornography.
Well, I'm working on that, though. I'm trying to. That's a wrong I'm trying to right.
The Portland metro area will be under a joint enforcement effort to crack down on drunk drivers over the Labor Day holiday weekend. This has never happened before, Rick. This is new. This is exciting. Clackamas, Multnomah, Washington, and Yamhill announced plans to step up enforcement. Oregon State Police will also join county sheriff's deputies and city police in a crackdown on dangerous, drunken, and impaired driving.
I don't know that that's really cracking down on drunken driving in the way that they would like you to believe it is. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I mean, clearly, if a guy is all liquored up behind the wheel and he's just weaving like a madman from lane to lane, that's a thing that I would like to not have happen near me. At the same time, it just seems to me that that's a bit of a, I'm not going to say it's a losing battle. It's not a winning battle. It's not a losing battle. It's just, there's a sort of stasis, I would imagine. Because, like, if the fear of somehow just ending up, being hosed out of your own dashboard is not really sufficient to keep you from driving drunk, doesn't really seem like the idea that they're going to fine you, whatever it is. I mean, I know that it's a serious deal now, that they'll suspend your license and they'll fine you, like, $5,000 or whatever the hell it is. I mean, I don't even know what the penalties are for drunk driving, but I know that they've been stepped up a lot. But for me, the whole thing that I don't want to be taking the rest of my meals through a straw, I don't want to be fed a bunch of liquefied spinach souffle, Christopher Reeve style, for the next 50 years. That really is the thing, I think, that would keep me from drunk driving more than anything else. And if that doesn't motivate you, you are beyond help.
Well, 10 years or so in journalism, and I can tell you that every holiday weekend, the police have a crackdown on drunk driving. Every holiday weekend, they send out press releases to the local media so that the local media can publicize the fact that there will be a crackdown on drunk driving.
So is this a preemptive? Is this like an attempt to get people to not drunk drive in the first place, I guess?
Step one is to try and make people realize, there's going to be a lot more cops on the road.
Right.
Now, first of all, if you drive a car and you have eyes, you should probably already be aware that holiday weekends, particularly ones that are known for like drinking, there are a lot more cops on the road. There always are. So, and then this is their thing where they're just basically reminding you of that fact ahead of time. And so there comes this point that it's like, if you do still get pulled over for speeding or drunk driving or for any reason during that particular holiday weekend, you are officially one of the biggest dumbasses on the planet.
You are, in fact, clinically retarded at that point.
Yeah, you should have your license taken away from you, not because you were driving drunk, but because you were so stupid that you did it on the single day that it was most likely that you would get caught by a police officer.
That's just sort of an out-of-the-gene-pool kind of a thing. Yeah. Well, especially here, have you ever done this where this probably doesn't happen in your neighborhood because you live in a respectable place, but
I do now. Remember, 10 years in North Portland.
This driving from here, like around where the studio is, to my house occasionally, and you always hear that thing when you're growing up, but toward the end of the month, the cops are on a quota system, and they have to start cracking down if they're going to, hit their ticket numbers. But occasionally, if you're driving up Powell, like if you're heading, east on Powell, there are days, and nights, where you will see a cop about every 50 feet, it seems like. They're just, it's like they're flies on a rib roast, and they are just, like from here to the horizon, just waiting to pull people over. Yeah. And sometimes it's a holiday weekend, and sometimes it's not. It doesn't really seem to be for any particular reason. So,
anyway. I live in Tualatin, and there are days that I'm driving the I-5. That particular corridor where people just speed like crazy going over that rise and down into Tiger, because it's like an optical illusion. It's a really wide freeway and you can see very far and it doesn't feel like you're driving very fast. And if you don't keep an eye on your speed, it's really easy to speed. And people just do like crazy. It's like they think, woohoo, I can drive fast here. And every so often, every few weeks, they'll just post like 5 motorcycle cops along there. And you just see them just yanking people over. So I never speed along there. And I always wondered myself, how many of these people make this commute every single day?
Here's the thing that
I
wonder.
And they still take that risk.
The thing I wonder about, and I'm not I don't know if I'm suggesting this. Sometimes I say, I'll give these disclaimers myself. I'm not suggesting that you do this because that would be wrong. And then occasionally, I don't really know whether I'm suggesting it or not. And sometimes that's based on a legal issue. Here's what I mean. I'll give you an example specifically what I'm talking about. Here's the thing that I am surprised at, or at which I am surprised. Whatever's correct. I am surprised that there has emerged no Twitter feed to notify people of speed traps here in Portland. And if that doesn't exist, and if it would be legal to do so, I heartily encourage the creation of that. If it would be illegal, I am wholly opposed to it, and I view it as an aid to terrorism. Mm. So
it shouldn't be illegal, but God knows it probably is.
Well, but it is, though. But no, but it is. And here's the reason I know it's illegal, or at least it has always been positioned to me as being illegal. Because every... You know, now and again, you will get some, I was going to say jackass DJ, but it really, you know, it's not even that jackass of a thing. You would get guys on the radio who would say, hey, we just got a listener call up, and apparently there's a speed trap happening up there at 35th and Powell. So if you're commuting, you want to watch out for the man who's hiding behind the billboard. And cops will come, and I have worked at radio stations where a DJ would say, he would announce on the air where a cop was sort of lurking in the shrubs with a radar gun. And the cops would either call or they would come to the radio station and they'd be like, knock it off. Because they said that, and their argument was, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, their argument was that that was, in fact, technically speaking, was an obstruction of justice because you were interfering with a police investigation. I'm not asking you to accept that that's the case. I'm saying that was what And when the cops show up and they say, stop it, you stop.
Yeah, you
just because I don't want to end up being sodomized out, you know, by a dumpster behind the station. Not that that would ever happen. So... That being said...
Is that how the police punish people for obstruction of justice now?
It's their own...
They sodomize them in back alleys.
It's their own brand of Halford-style justice, Don.
Wow, they really have brought LAPD techniques here to Portland, Oregon. All the sodomizing and the beating and the tasing and the whatnot.
I was going to make the worst joke. I was going to make the worst, most obvious joke. And, you know, I'm not going to do it now. I'll file it away. And if it still seems funny at the end of the hour, I'll say it then. But the internet offers at least this perceived veil of anonymity. And you would think that somebody would have, had like a sort of speed trap PDX Twitter feed where people could then just tweet wherever they, you know, saw a guy standing off the side of the road behind a billboard or a sign or an overpass or whatever with a radar gun. Because that's a thing that you never see until it's too late. But then you're sort of retroactively angry. Even if the guy didn't hit you. It happens on Powell all the time where you will be speeding along, like if you're me. And I don't ever speed with reckless abandon. I mean, I will go 10 miles over the speed limit sometimes, like everybody does. Like in Seattle, that's sort of the accepted speed limit, is 10 miles over.
It kind of is here, too. I actually read a story once when they were talking about a traffic crackdown, not a speed trap. Traffic crackdown in Lake Oswego. And they were digging everybody who they clocked it going over 10 miles over the speed limit. So I think that cops will give you some leeway if you are within that.
Well,
10 miles depending on where you are.
And also,
not on a residential street, obviously. But
well, and not just because they're good guys. I think cops will do that. Not just because they want to cut you a break, although, you know, that has happened, from time to time, where it's, I think, you know, I got pulled over, actually. I never mentioned this on the air because it was such a non-event. I got pulled over about 6 weeks ago. I was going to the store or something. And a cop pulled me over, and I thought, crap. And I can't remember if I told the story or not. It doesn't matter. But I got pulled over near my house, and immediately you're thinking, oh, God, what have I done? Is that, you know, what is it? Is my license expired? Are my tabs expired? Was I weaving? Was I speeding? Was I on my cell phone, which is not, like, out of the question? And it turns out that actually my rear driver's side brake light was out, and the guy just came up and he said, hey, do you know why I pulled you over tonight? And I must have just had the ring of truth to my voice, because I just said, I have no earthly idea. And he said, well, your rear brake light is out on the driver's side. And I said, really? No fooling? Seriously? And he said, yes. And I said, I had no idea. And I actually said, and I wasn't trying to suck up, I just said, thank you for telling me, because how often do you check your own brake lights? Like, never. And so I read, and here's the other thing, is that I am like Johnny Courteous, because I gave him the whole, like,
oh, yeah.
I have to reach into my glove box now and hand you my, and you have no idea how much cops appreciate that one statement. If you say, I'm going to reach into my glove box and get my paperwork now, just so you know.
I said that to a cop once. It was like, I need to see your registration. I said, it's in my glove compartment. Please don't shoot me.
I had to get my license out, and I said, I got to reach into my pocket here, get my license. And he's like, no problem. And that, I think, bought me all kinds of credibility with him. But plus, also, let's be honest, I no longer am just like a scraggly. I don't look like a meth dealer anymore, which I did for a lot of my sort of wayward youth. Anyway, but the guy just said, he's like, well, you want to get that fixed one of these days. Have a good night. And took off. And I was like, ah, fan. And suddenly, I became like every suburban guy who was a friend of the cops. I was like, oh, the cops are fine people because he just let me go with
a
warning.
Thank you, officer.
Yeah, I was like,
you have a good day.
You know, they are truly the few and the proud and the chosen brave among us. And, you know, it's like I had Lee Greenwood songs playing in my head and whatever. But it's like that thing if you're driving along on Powell and you will pass a cop who is standing there holding the speed gun, even if he doesn't ding you, you look back and you go, oh, bastard. And you just, you know, because you view it as cheating. And also, I'm not, and this is the last thing I'll say, we got to move on.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to knock cops about this. I'm not trying to pick on cops specifically. I'm just saying this is human nature, and one cannot deny human nature. When you see a cop standing, like, you know, like by an embankment or like behind a billboard, or he's in one of those concrete dividers, like between the two lanes of the highway, and he's sort of crouching there, you know, so he's, you can't really see him. You just pass that guy and you think, oh, you are such a pussy. Just hiding there behind a shrub with the radar gun. Not even out front like a man where I can see you. And then you get retrospectively angry about it, and that's when you want to Twitter about it and tell like everybody, hey, there's a pussy cop standing there with a radar gun. Because you view that as a guy, you know what it is? You view that as some Nancy boy cop who's like, you know, that he's like the kind of cop who's on desk duty, you know? He's not going to go out there and actually face a real threat. He's going to hide in some weeds with a radar gun. And you have instant contempt for him. I'm not saying he deserves it, but I'm saying that is how the human mind operates.
I usually kind of feel a little sorry for them because I assume they'd rather be doing real cop work rather than standing there for hours doing this incredibly tedious thing that is just kind of sneaky and creepy.
It's true. All right, you're listening to Legion of News, by the way, right here at PDX.fm. Don't forget this program is available later on today via iTunes, also at legionofnews.com and PDX.fm, and on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm. This is Don Taylor.
The center of Hurricane Earl is passing by the Outer Banks of North Carolina and will approach southeastern New England on Friday night, according to the National Hurricane Center. Ben McNeely was vacationing on Cape Hatteras when he was told this week to evacuate, which he did.
Is this Earl 1?
Earl 1.
They can say mandatory evacuation, or they won't, but, you know, it doesn't mean they're pulling people, you know, kicking and screaming out of their houses. There's still a lot of locals still out there.
This sounds like one of those tapes that the cops get where they've tapped a guy's phone because they're hearing him talk about whacking a guy who's been late on his numbers money.
Yeah. Mandatory evacuation, or he won't, but, you know, it doesn't mean they're pulling people, you know, kicking and screaming out of their houses. There's still a lot of locals still out there on the island just riding out the storm.
All right, we have somebody watching the back of the house, and you'll be out front of the car, and then we should be able to get away without anybody noticing.
McNeely was vacationing with friends. We should put just quotation marks around that.
Friends of ours.
We've decided that he's up to no good
on
Hatteras until a mandatory evacuation on Wednesday.
It
was pretty orderly. Traffic was pretty light. People were just, I think they were more perturbed than anything else. They were, you know, I know we were.
Is this Boom Hour from King of the Hill? Hold on, let me play that one more time. That's fantastic.
It was pretty orderly. Traffic was pretty light. People were just, I think they were more perturbed than anything else. They were, you know, I know we were.
Dang old man, hurricane man.
Apparently, there's a bank robbery going on in Hillsborough right now,
but I can't
find any breaking news on it on the intrawebs.
Okay,
so
let's not unduly alarm people. When you say there's a bank robbery happening somewhere in Hillsborough,
this is according to somebody in the text box, so they could just be making it up.
That could just be some lunatic. We don't know for a fact.
Yeah.
That there is a bank robbery happening, quote, somewhere in Hillsborough. That has been
there
alleged.
There might be.
Well, okay, that's true. There might also be large green reptilian aliens downtown demanding that Sam Adams come out and surrender the keys to the city, but we don't know that it's true.
That would be awesome.
It would be awesome, but it's just speculative at this point. It's not really a thing that we can say is an actual fact, sort of in a journalistic sense.
Okay.
It's funny how working.
Apparently there is something going on in Hillsborough near a bank that involves, quote, cops everywhere.
Now, is this just from the one guy? Do we have secondary? It's amazing how working with me, your journalistic, you know, your sort of rules of journalistic integrity have just gone out the window.
Yeah, they're just disappeared.
You don't actually need a secondary source. It's just some guy in a text box typing something to you over the internet, and you pass it along just unthinkingly as the truth. Not that I care about that. I'm just saying, I thought that you were different than that, Tom.
You know, that's kind of, though, my entire job, though, is I get these news. I didn't actually research any of these news stories that I'm sharing with the public.
I don't know why.
I'm trusting local news agencies and national wire services and you, and I'm just reading these stories as if they are true. This is the thing. Whenever somebody catches a news agency out in some kind of a lie, like, how could you fall for that hoax? It's like they don't understand that that's basically what journalists, 90% of journalists' job is getting information from other places and then passing it along without actually and trusting the people that they got.
Well, you and
from.
I have talked about this, that everything, you know, that 90% of the stuff that you see in your local newspaper, like any given day, is just crap that's been sent to them in a press release by somebody else that they are blindly trusting. And they just say, well, I guess it's true. He's got letterhead. Okay, type it up. Send it. Print. All right. Make a plate. Here's Don Taylor.
Pennsylvania police have arrested a third person in connection with the murder of a man named Samuel Boob. This, by the way, is my favorite story today.
Let me tell you a little story about a man named Boob.
Boob was shot and killed at his home in Potter Township, Pennsylvania, on the morning of August 23rd, 2009.
Not in Bailey Park, in Potter Township, just so we're clear.
Kermit Butts, 26, of Madisonburg, Pennsylvania, is accused of driving the suspected killer to and from the crime scene on the morning of the killing. He was charged with aggravated assault and assisting a murder suspect and placed in county prison. Police believe that Butts drove Ronald Heischel to the Boob home and picked him up later in the day. Police believe Heischel shot Sam Boob twice with a shotgun and killed him.
He took him to Casa de Boob, literally to Casa de Boob.
Heischel was charged with first-degree murder. The victim's wife, Marinda Boob, is accused of working with Heischel to have her husband killed.
Are you of the Lake Champlain Boobs?
Police say they have text messages that were sent between Marinda Boob and Heischel, proving that the two were working together to kill Mr. Boob. Marinda Boob has been charged with conspiracy to commit murder.
Is this like one of those, what is that children's thing with the Mr. people where it's like Mr. Polite and, you know, Miss Talkative? You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like the little circular cylindrical bodies with feet, and it's like, who are you? I'm Mr. Happy, you know? Yeah. I'm Mrs. Scary. All right. So where does Mr. Butts come into this?
He apparently drove the guy who shot Mr. Boob to and from the crime scene. So Kermit Butts drove
Kermit,
this
his first name is Kermit.
He drove this Heischel guy to and from the Boob home to shoot Samuel Boob with a shotgun at the behest of Samuel Boob's wife,
Marinda Boob.
Marinda Boob.
Marinda or Miranda?
Marinda.
All right. So
here's a picture of Kermit Butts. By the way, I really like the opportunity to say the word boob as much as I possibly can, and it's okay because it's like the guy's name.
And it is, I mean, I don't know how I expected it to be spelled. It is spelled butts. It's not with a Z, which I guess maybe is how I anticipated it. It is B-U-T-T-S, and then boob. You know what I thought for a second? I was wondering if they had attempted to give it sort of like an upscale Renfair spelling of like B-O-O-B-E, you know, or something.
Nope, it's just boob.
Just B-O-O-B, to kill Mr. Boob. Marinda Boob has been charged with conspiracy to commit murder. That's fantastic. And I like that the other guy's name is Heischel. Because then it's sort of like, then it's like one of them is from Brooklyn and he's going to get an egg cream on his way to commit the crime. Heischel, come on, we have to go kill the boob. Ah, that's wonderful. All right. That's fantastic. But he was placed in the center county prison. But center, though, does have the sort of a Jim Fair spelling. It's the C-E-N-T-R-E. Yeah. There you go. That's awesome. This guy's just a mouth breather, too.
Oh, yeah.
This guy's just like
Kermit Butts.
He is a gum chewer like there's no tomorrow. All right. Yeah, fantastic. You were listening to Legion of News right here at BDX.FM. If you found the Boob and Butts story amusing, you might want to thank, A, your lucky stars that you were good enough to discover this fine outlet and this fine program, and also you want to thank Castalia Language Center, who again are being positioned immediately following a story that has some sort of awkward language and verbiage in it. Maybe there's some sort of subconscious thing I'm doing here. Doesn't matter. Castalia Language Center is a small private school in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. So, I'm bluffing my way through the Casa de Boob thing. But they could probably give you some sort of specificity in terms of how that should be pronounced. Unlike old-fashioned institutions, Castalia focuses on real-life situations. They work with authentic materials, and it's not... And it's not that thing. And trust me, I'm a big language nerd like nobody's business. I mean, I am a grammar Nazi like you have never known. But I also recognize that that is fundamentally unrelated to being able to use a language in conversation so people can understand what you're talking about. So if you're just sitting there and you're having to learn like the gerund form of something, or you're just having to work on conjugation, Can I tell you, can I admit something to you right now?
Certainly.
I don't really know what conjugation even is. And it's not like I don't know how language operates. It's just one of those things where I am unable to identify many of the parts of language by name.
Conjugation is where you change the different tenses of the words.
Past tense, present tense, future tense.
Yeah. He said, she said, it said.
But what is the verb? I mean, in other words, if you say, I'm going to conjugate a, what does that mean?
I believe that would be to present tense or past tense. So jumping.
Right. No,
that's conjugating a verb.
Wait, but so to conjugate is to change the tense?
Yeah.
Okay. See? So right there, I guess that is, I didn't intend this to be this way, but this is a perfect example. So that is the thing where I can use the English language, and I would say with some panache, but I don't really know what anything is called. You know why? One has nothing to do with the other. So this is the method of Castalia Language Center, where it's actually language in a way that you can actually use, and in a way that you can use it conversationally. And so if you find yourself in a Spanish-speaking community or in a Spanish-speaking city or locale, that you're able to actually sort of get along and to be able to function in a day-to-day, real-world kind of way. Classes are limited to 8 students, and it's a comfortable, relaxed environment. And by the way, they teach it's just for adults, and you know, because kids just learn in a different way. You can find out more about the school by going to PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. That is the way you get a hold of Castalia Language Center. This is Don Taylor.
Señor Boob fue asesinado con una escopeta.
I had somebody know yesterday that perhaps Castalia Language Center might want to pass along to you the way that you pronounce some of those Spanish words as like Google or Babel or whatever is just spitting them out of the computer at you.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
My pronunciation is.
Maybe we can work on that one of these days. All right.
Here we have breaking news on bank robbery.
Hold on a second. Here's breaking news via Legion of News right here at PDX.fm.
Police are searching for a suspect who robbed the Oregon First Community Credit Union in Hillsborough just before 11 a.m. today. Police said the man entered the credit union at 434 Southeast Washington Street and told the teller, "Give me all your money." He had his hand in his pocket, and it is unknown whether he was armed.
He was not armed.
The man fled on foot with an undisclosed amount of cash. Hillsborough police conducted a dog track, but have not yet located the suspect. Police spokesman Lieutenant Mike Rouches, I have no idea how you pronounce his name.
Just bluff your way, nobody
Rouches,
will know.
Mike Rouches, said the dog track indicated the suspect hasn't gotten in a vehicle yet and is still in the area. "I believe he's around," he said from the scene. "We're going to keep hanging out here until we find him."
Is that actually what it says?
Yes.
We're going to be hanging out?
We're going to keep hanging out here until we find him.
Okay.
The suspect is described as a man about 5 feet 6 inches in his early 20s with a slim build and black hair. He was last seen wearing blue pants, a white shirt, black hooded sweatshirt, white tennis shoes, and aviator-style sunglasses.
There you go. This has been Breaking News from Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. All right, so there you go. And what was it? Was it a credit union or a bank?
It was a credit union.
All right. But how much money could they possibly have gotten from a credit union? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Credit union.
There you go. That has been Breaking News from the Legion of News news desk. This is Don Taylor.
Two people were taken to a hospital for smoke inhalation after escaping an early morning fire at a Vancouver apartment, firefighters said. Police dispatchers said they received a 911 call about 1 a.m. Friday from a woman screaming, "My apartment is on fire," before the line went dead. Vancouver fire crews arrived at the Autumn Chase Apartments in the 11,000 block of Northeast 7th Street about 5 minutes later. Arriving firefighters said they saw flames shooting 50 feet in the air from 3 second-floor apartments. The caller, identified as 64-year-old Faith Hobbs, was helped out the back of her apartment by a neighbor. "I thought I was going to get burnt. I was yelling," Hobbs said.
Just once, I would like for somebody to call 911 to report that the roof is on fire.
Another Good Samaritan helped catch Hobbs after she jumped to safety from her second-floor window. Hobbs and the 45-year-old man who assisted her inside the apartment, the burning apartment, suffered from smoke inhalation. One of Hobbs' cats died in the fire.
Uh-huh.
People living in 6 units were displaced by the blaze.
Here's a question. Do the cops really use that, like, round trampoline thing for you to jump out the window onto? Or is that a thing that I just have in my head from, like Warner Brothers cartoons?
From cartoons and circuses.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
and
think
then it's always
really
clowns holding it, you know, in circuses. It's never actually real firefighters.
Yeah, and I don't think it ever really saves anyone when the clowns do it. Don't they end up bouncing back up off it or going straight through it?
Yeah, or you're just sort of a... I think in Killer Clowns from Outer Space, I can't believe I'm actually citing that. This is how my brain works. I was citing that as, like, an actual reference so we could determine whether or not real-world firefighters... This is perhaps This perhaps explains a great deal of the non-seriousness with which this show is apparently taken. This is why Steve Dean wouldn't come back to Outlook Portland, because I was referencing Killer Clowns from Outer Space as, you know, like an example of how the fire department operates.
That's why he was giving you the stink eye when he was on TV with you.
It wasn't like he was even mean to me. He's just sort of, first of all, he looks just like Mike Ditka. This is Steve Dean, columnist from The Oregonian, who is, by the way, I should say, he seems like, I'm going to say he's a nice guy. He's sort of gruff, you know, in a kind of curmudgeonly, you know, sort of lovable kind of way. But he was on Outlook Portland with Anna Griffin, who was actually on the Rick Emerson show yesterday. And it wasn't that he was mean as such. He just sort of sat there, and it's like he was looking at me like I was some sort of a... He was looking at me like I was some sort of a kind of insect he had never seen before. And he was sort of fascinated, but then figuring he was going to have to squash me at some point, you know? Sort of, that's an interesting sort of creature I found underneath my bed. I guess I'll have to broom it away, though, and then squash it.
When you were a young single man, how did you do with ladies' fathers?
Oh, how do you imagine I did with
ladies'
fathers?
I would imagine they didn't really care for you much.
They didn't.
I've seen pictures of you with the huge sideburns and the longish hair and such.
They, as my mother would say, they didn't cotton to me much at all.
Yeah.
That was I was just as it, what's his name, Keanu Reeves and Parenthood, that Todd, I was always that Rick. So, no, I was not, and it wasn't just the parents or fathers of the ladies. My friend's parents did not like me in general. And that's not because, like, I was some sort of, like, rebellious, like, edgy badass. Clearly, I was not a badass in any way.
Is it because you were a smartass?
It's like, I was just a... That's the thing, is I just was just a...
They didn't like the back talk?
I didn't... I was a little too smart for my own good, is what it was.
You had a smart mouth.
Yeah,
you?
I was... And I believe myself, with some justification, I should add, to be smarter than other people.
Were you too big for your britches?
I was too big for my britches. I also thought the rules applied to everybody but me. All right. And anyway, and then so, yeah, so that was, no, I was not, I was, and then it got really, really bad in high school because I was the, you know, because it's a small town and I went to a Catholic school when I was growing up and whatever, and you have the same sort of circle of friends. I was the only one of my circle of friends that I was not confirmed. And confirmation is like a secondary baptism. It happens when you're like 16 or so. It's not like a bar mitzvah or something, but it's sort of it's kind of like that.
I have no idea why, but I come from an Irish Catholic background myself, so I know what all these things mean.
Yeah.
And yet, when you say you were the only one in your circle of friends who was not confirmed, for some reason in my mind, I conflated that with circumcision.
No.
And I don't know why.
No.
Because I know better.
Maybe it's because I said bar mitzvah right afterward.
Maybe.
And you started thinking about something
else
altogether.
We've been talking about penises. We've been talking about penises a lot lately.
That's what we do. Just penises and drugs. No, so all my friends opted to be confirmed. And then I just said, no, not for me, thanks. I'm out of here. And that was like the final straw for them, is that I was a heathen and, you know, my soul would be damned, blah, blah, blah. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
We need to get to some science news.
Science is on the march.
We're so far behind schedule with all our chatter.
No. We're ahead of schedule, Don.
Man, what a stack of news I have.
We're ahead of schedule from Monday.
Oh, that's true.
That's it. So
I don't have to do... This will all still be fresh on Monday.
That's what I'm saying. You got to look at these things the right way.
No one will know any better. It's not like anyone actually watches the news or keeps up, except for this show.
That's right.
A Tasmanian devil named Cedric, once thought to be immune to a contagious facial cancer...
Cedric. Okay.
Thought to be immune to a contagious facial cancer threatening the iconic creatures with extinction, has been euthanized after succumbing to the disease.
Oh, this is a depressing story. Why do you got to bring me down?
It is a little sad.
Why do you got to bring a brother down like that on a Friday?
It's science, and it's important that you know this, Rick, because this is a blow for scientists who have been struggling to stop the rapid spread of the facial cancer.
You're just depressing me.
Which is transmitted when the black marsupials bite each other.
Yes, no, I know. I know all about the Tasmanian devil face cancer.
Do you?
I do.
I didn't know.
I'm not,
that
not screwing with you. I totally know that. That is they get, and it's sort of horrible because it's like a disfiguring sort of tumor thing. And yeah, and it's like, so they'll bite each other because it's what they do. But it's weird. It's like a contagious. Yeah. Like, you don't think of cancer as being contagious, which that's one of the other reasons this sort of freaks me out. Because it's like, if you got the cancer and you, like, brush up against me in an elevator, it's not like I worry about getting it. But that is how it's spread, basically, with Tasmanian devils. And then it's just, like, decimating the population. And here's the thing is, I like Tasmanian devils, and not just because of the Warner Brothers thing.
No, they're very...
They're adorable.
They're really cool.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
But the Tasmanian devil population has plummeted by 70% since devil facial tumor disease was discovered in 1996. Cedric, in 2008, he developed two small facial tumors after being injected with a different strain of the cancer, and he fought it off for a long time, so they thought that, perhaps they were coming up with a cure.
Right.
But it didn't work.
There ain't no cure for cancer. No.
And he got lung tumors. Chemotherapy wouldn't have worked. The researchers didn't want him to suffer, so they decided to euthanize him. So, sadly,
we are still
looking for a cure for what's happening to the poor Tasmanian devils.
Which is, you know, and I really do root for those creatures, especially because they make the coolest noise. I mean, everybody sort of knows the Taz, you know, everything, but just in real life too, they just make the most fantastic, hilarious sound, and they just seem like such misfits. They just seem like little mutant creatures. Like, they're not quite from here, or they developed by accident somehow. Like, there was maybe just some mishap with a gene pool at some point, and they were just sort of sprang into existence, like, defying the laws of nature and God. So they're sort of great. So I root for bizarre creatures like that. Yes.
A thumbnail-sized clam blamed for clouding the azure bays of Lake Tahoe in the Sierra Nevada has now turned up in the mountain-ringed Adirondack Lake, renowned for its limpid spring-fed waters.
Wait a minute. Is this the Adirondack Lake where Anna Griffin went?
It might be.
Because she said she was in the Adirondacks.
She was in the Adirondacks.
Whatever that place might have been.
This is Lake George.
I can't even say the word correctly.
The Asian clam, Corbicula fluminia.
Asian clam.
Is known as the golden clam in the aquarium trade.
Golden clam.
And the good luck clam in its native Southeast Asia. But in Lake George, scientists call it an unwelcome invader that could cause ecological and economic harm. An intensive search launched after a few tiny clams were found at a beach in August turned up no additional infestations, suggesting the invasion was discovered before it had a chance to spread across the 32-mile-long lake. The next step is to determine their age and concentration by taking sediment core samples and deciding what to do about them. Since scattered numbers of Asian clams were discovered in Lake Tahoe in 2002, the population has exploded there thanks to the mollusk's ability to self-fertilize and release up to 2,000 juveniles a day. Their waste has helped trigger algae blooms that have turned the blue water in the lake into a bright green. So,
you know, first of all, it's not like it's dangerous or anything, though, right?
Well, it's dangerous to the ecosystem of the lake. You get too much algae, and it screws up the oxygenation and stuff in the lake, and it can kill fish.
Now, maybe you just said this. Maybe this was in the article. But are they from there originally?
No. I can't remember. We read this story about Lake Tahoe a while back.
Was the clam, like, brought there somehow accidentally or something?
They believe it came in attached to the bottoms of boats.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, if it wasn't dangerous, if it's not going to screw up the ecosystem, which apparently it does, then we should just roll with the fact that the lake is going to be bright green. Like, there you go. Bam. I mean, who says that lakes have to be blue?
Why? That it messes up the fish and stuff
I suppose,
there.
But I mean, you know, whatever. Life is hard. So that's just, that's just the way that life's road becomes bumpy sometimes, and one just has to navigate around that.
That's all our science.
All right, there you go. That's science on the march. Speaking of science, hold on a second. I'm just getting a text message from somebody about something.
Okay.
No. It's a bit of a false alarm. Speaking of science, we should take a moment to talk about our good friends, The Cleaning Solution. That is Mr. Michael Beatty. He is a longtime listener of... you were looking askance at me just now.
No, I wasn't. I was looking at my computer. I wasn't looking at you at
all.
You kind
of turned and you did like a this, and you looked like under your microphone this way.
No, I didn't look your way at all.
You did just now. Do you have a third eye that I don't know
about?
Oh, I
was looking to see where the plug was, where the MP3 player was, so I could get the plug.
No, you did this
sound.
I know that this doesn't make sense to anybody but me. You just did like the weirdest sort of body turn, and then your head turned toward me, and then your eyes darted back and forth, and then you shifted back into position, and it looked like you were doing a weird sort of limbo while glaring at me.
No, the MP3 player is usually over there, and I was looking for the plug.
You're looking for the cord.
And so I was kind of ducking around the mic to see where it was.
No, it just looked like you were having what my grandmother would call a conniption fit.
Oh, well, that's possible, too, because I do that. Sometimes I just twitch.
Moving on. Let's talk about the cleaning solution. That is in the person of Mr. Michael Beatty. He's a longtime listener of the Rick Emerson Show and a supporter of Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. I'll give you the number right up front. He can be reached at 971-533-3211. 971 533-3211. And while there may be no way to clean the green algae out of Lake Tahoe, there is a way to clean whatever color it is. It might be green, blue, purple, red, mauve.
That was awesome.
You know, nobody will notice the bad segue if somebody else in the room doesn't point it out. Don Taylor! Look, you sons of bitches, I'm doing the best I can here to segue from a news story into discussing cleaning a hardwood floor. It is difficult enough without the peanut gallery constantly tossing criticism my way when I am doing a yeoman's job.
You know, if you've got clams clinging to the bottom of your boat, you should clean them off. And speaking of cleaning...
I swear to God, one of these days, I'm just going to hand this to you. I'm just going to make you do it.
I'm sorry. Please continue. I'm sorry. I'll just be
over here. Nothing else you'd like to say?
I'll just be over here doing my little news things.
You don't want me to... I could just sit here for a while so you could take some free shots, get it out of your system.
No, no.
Are you done?
No, I'll just... I'm good. Thanks.
In any event... If you'd like to write this number down, I heartily endorse that you do that, because there will come a time when you need it. Don Taylor's snarking notwithstanding, you'll walk out of the living room and you will see something that maybe wasn't there the day before, or maybe it was, you just didn't notice it, or, this is the other thing that happens, I have actually moved into, like, if you've ever been in, like, a furnished apartment or something, where you move a piece of furniture, or maybe there was a piece of furniture there, something gets spilled on the furniture, you think it's taken care of, like you spill something on the couch, like, I don't know, maybe you spilled some red wine on Tim Riley's couch, a couch that I believe cost $4,000. I don't know who in this room might have ever stained Tim Riley's couch with a glass of red wine.
Oh, touche, Rick Emerson.
Who would that have been?
Touche.
Don Taylor. So let's say perhaps you're Tim Riley and you have some people over to your house for Thanksgiving, asking only that they respect your property and not drunkenly spill staining red fluids onto it. Well, let's say that somebody, I don't know who that person would be, spills a glass of red wine into the furniture. Now, you could get that off the sofa, but then later on, you might actually move the sofa because you're moving your furniture around, thus ensuring that the carpet is sort of worn evenly, and then you discover a patch of red wine on the carpet underneath the couch because it had dripped through past the upholstery onto the carpet. And you say to yourself, my God, how will I ever get this out? The key is you call Michael Beatty at the Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. Stain removal, carpet repairs, upholstery, stone, marble tile, anything your feet might touch. And he also does, if you have odors in your carpet, or if you've got a pet and it sort of stain things and it kind of has that weird funk coming out of it, you can get rid of that as well. Residential and commercial work, contact him at 971-533-3211. Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution. This is Don Taylor.
Were
you just about to type something snarky in a text box and I interrupted you?
No. I'm trying to figure something out.
You had that that look. You were in that pose like you were sort of like you were poised over the text box with both hands, ready to just bring them down to the keyboard, like you were starting the beginning of Beethoven's Ninth.
No, I was about to read a story and I realized that I didn't have the information of where this actually occurred. So I was going to try with one hand to quickly type the kid's name in. And find out where it actually happened, and I don't know.
We'll come back to it. Because we've got an entire, we've got the rest of this program, and then, of course, the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock. Yeah. So this mystery story might be broadcast during the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Later.
That's coming up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com.
A man was arrested after gunshots sparked a search in a North Portland neighborhood, police said. Portland Police Bureau spokesman Sergeant Pete Simpson said a Multnomah County Sheriff's deputy conducting a traffic stop at North Syracuse Street and Philadelphia Avenue heard several shots at about 9:30 a.m. yesterday morning. Responding officers spoke to witnesses who also heard the gunfire. Police and a canine team searched the area and found two men in a building in the 7200 block of North Burlington Avenue. Officers said 39-year-old Zach Mosier was arrested on suspicion of unlawful use of a weapon, disorderly conduct, and discharge of a firearm in the city. Another man was questioned but not arrested. No one was injured and no property was damaged. It is not believed the gunshots were intended to injure anyone. Alcohol might have been a factor in the incident.
You think?
9:30 a.m. on Thursday. People just shooting off guns, not really actually trying to shoot anyone. Alcohol might have been a factor.
I wonder if there's a macro for that. If that's just like F4, you know, at the Oregonian or wherever. Just, alcohol may have been a factor.
And this is the one. This is the first one of these I've ever gotten across my desk where I've looked at the mugshot and gone, ooh, sexy criminal.
Really?
Yeah. The guy is hot. With two exceptions, he has a soul patch, which I find offensive. And you can tell from the picture, not so much the way I've printed it here, but I can tell in the bigger picture, he has earrings in both ears. He's removed his earrings because he went to jail. But both of his ears are pierced. And for some reason, that puts me off.
Piercings or both ears?
Both ears.
Well,
I don't know why.
No,
well,
if you're a guy, you have to do both ears. Because one earring now officially looks just weird.
I guess. I'm not sure. It just kind of, I'm just a little
Let me see the mugshot.
But the guy is hot.
All right,
he's hot in that way that he is so totally my type, like the kind of guy I go for.
I'm trying to see him without the so the soul patch is ridiculous. Here's the thing: unless you are in fact a beatnik or a jazz musician or both, it doesn't work because you have to be wearing a beret or something. He looks like I'm trying to figure out who he looks like. Well, you wouldn't know. This means nothing to you. He looks not unlike this guy, Gary Zabransky, who is Tom Likas' producer, but I can't quite figure out a real word. He looks like, goddamn, he's one of the guys on Law & Order, I think, but I could be wrong about that.
Christopher Maloney. He looks a little like Christopher Maloney.
That's who I'm thinking of. All right, there you go. So he looks, so that's your type?
Yeah, I've got this thing for guys with, like, really dark hair and big noses and the whole high forehead thing going on. That is just, that is the type.
All right.
We've talked about, like, how much I love, like,
You're the nose fetish.
Mike Rowe and the guy on Cash Cab.
Yeah.
And, I got this nose and high forehead thing.
So. I get the feeling that about half the population, male and female alike, would F Mike Rowe if they had the chance.
Yeah, he's pretty dreamy.
I probably would. I mean, why not? Hey, have at it. You know, how many times in your life you get to say you F the dirty jobs guy? Like, almost never.
True.
So, you know, why not? Hey,
you got to figure he'd pretty much be up for anything. There's a guy who's not going to be, like, weirded out and squeamish by stuff.
That's true, because you figure he spends about a third of those episodes rooting around in a sewer. So, you know. And so forth. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up at 1 o'clock today. So a couple of things. First of all, at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson show takes the airwaves over at rickemerson.com, featuring a Cannibal Watch, Geek Watch coming up today. And we'll actually get to yesterday's top five. It's like what they say, you know, tomorrow's news today. This is yesterday's top five this afternoon. We'll do the top five first songs from the first side of a first album. So, the very first song on a debut record from a band. Song one, side one. So that's coming up today. And then, coming up, this sounds more confusing than it is, but the Rick Emerson Show comes on at 1 o'clock. Then later on tonight at 6 p.m. this evening, that is at 6 p.m. here Pacific time on Friday, September. It is Friday, right?
Yes.
Friday, September 3rd. So today, Friday, September 3rd, 6 p.m. at rickemerson.com, we will be conducting our live interview with Mr. Dave Mustaine of Megadeth. So that is, and I am not making that up. So that's coming up this evening. So the Rick Emerson Show at 1 o'clock. Our interview with Megadeth's Dave Mustaine, that is coming up at 6 p.m. tonight. Now, that's going to be encored, though, next week. So on the Rick Emerson Show next week, that'll be encored. So that's coming up tonight at 6 o'clock. But the Rick Emerson Show proper is at 1 p.m. You can find out more about that at rickemerson.com. And if you are not currently subscribing, you are lost in this world. There is no hope for you. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news.
It's time for your entertainment news. It is Friday right here at Legion of News. Ba-bum.
Actor Paul Hogan, star of the Crocodile Dundee movies, has vowed to continue fighting the Australian Tax Office, which has barred him from leaving Australia until he pays a massive bill. Hogan 70, that makes no sense at all.
That's his username.
Was served with a departure prohibition order 10 days ago while in Australia to attend his 101-year-old mother's funeral, which has prevented him from leaving to return to Los Angeles, where he lives with his wife and son. The Australian Tax Office refused to comment on reports of seeking tax on a $34 million Australian, of allegedly undeclared income from Hogan. That's $34 million of undeclared income, saying it cannot give details of individual taxpayers.
How is it that Paul Hogan could possibly have made $34 million, unless they're just like considering in his entire life?
I don't know.
I mean, that's not what they're not saying, like, over the last 70 years you made that. I mean, it seems like that's probably a recent kind of debt. I don't even know how that's possible.
It may be over the last couple of decades, because this is part of a $3 million investigation that Australia is doing into a probe into offshore tax evasion called Operation Wickenby. So the tax office claims he put tens of millions of dollars in film royalties into offshore tax havens, a claim that he has denied. He's never been charged with tax evasion, and he says, I can't pay 10% of what they're asking. Bugger them.
Awesome. Good for him. All right. See, I started off this story against him, but now I'm for him. Because, you know, people in America, I know that everybody pays, you know, too many taxes and blah, blah, blah. People kvetch about that. But really, You know, there are other countries. There are countries where they just screw you on taxes, like way more than here. I mean, in Britain especially, you always hear entertainers talk about, you know, the like, you know, guys like
55% tax bracket,
like,
that sort of thing.
Like the Stones and Zeppelin, you know, in the '70s, they always talked about how they couldn't spend that many days in Britain. They had to make sure that they stayed abroad because if they stayed in Britain like one day too long, they would get hit with literally like a 75% tax on, you know, every dollar over whatever. So. You know, there are places in the world where they Roger you, but good, yeah.
The first song Brooks and Dunn ever sang together has become their last. The country music duo closed out a 20-year career at Nashville's Bridgestone Arena Thursday night with their 1991 debut single, Brand New Man, during their encore. The sold-out show was the final stop on their last rodeo tour and doubled as a fundraiser for the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum. They ran through many of their 23 number one hits, including Neon Moon, My Maria, and Boots Scootin' Boogie. Reba McEntire made a quick appearance during Cowgirls Don't Cry. Walking off stage for the final time, Brooks gave Dunn a playful push. The duo has sold more than 30 million albums and won more than 80 major industry awards.
And not so secretly hate each other. I don't know that that's true. I don't know that that's true. That's a
playful push.
That
punch.
Is one of those, oh, I wish you were dead. I should take that back because I don't know with any certainty that that is the case. But that is one of those things that, and not like I'm some music industry insider or whatever, but working in radio, that is one of the, and country radio especially, that is one of those things you always hear. You always have heard these sort of whisperings that Kix Brooks and Ronnie Dunn hate each other. Now, that may not be true, but I will tell you this, that about 10 or 15 years ago, maybe, because I've always worked at or near a country station. It's like I can only... This is actually the first... I think this is the first show I've done where I have not been down the hall from some country outfit. But I remember hearing years before it was actually public and before it happened that that Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood, you know, were together. And, you know, and that was when he was still with the Pearl or whatever her name is, his wife. And then he dumped her and hooked up with Trisha Yearwood. So that was just one of those things. And so it is with Brooks and Dunn, who I actually quite like. I should say that it's not like I'm, I have their box set or something, but I'm kind of a Brooks and Dunn fan. Here's the thing about them, though. First of all, you got to give it up to a country act where one of the guys is named Kix, K-I-X, which really seems like a non-country kind of name. So I don't know what that's all about. And Ronnie Dunn, who I swear to God, you bring up a picture of Ronnie Dunn on your computer, everybody, you look at him, he looks exactly like you took Allison Janney from the West Wing and stuck a beard on her. No lie. Full on. If you took CJ Craig from the West Wing and you just put like a really ill-fitting Monty Python, I'm here for the stoning beard on her, that's Ronnie Dunn. It's just, it's uncanny how much he looks like Allison Janney, which is unfortunate for one of them. I'm not really sure who.
Snoop Dogg has become the first rap artist to be featured in the video game Rock Band, which has songs from top artists like Jimi Hendrix, The Who, AC/DC, and Green Day. 8 Snoop Dogg tracks will appear in the Rock Band music store. The game will be released Tuesday. Some of Snoop Dogg's songs were reproduced from the game. They will include such popular hits as Drop It Like It's Hot, Who Am I, What's My Name, and Sensual Seduction. The first week of the final season of the Oprah Winfrey Show will include a selection for Oprah's Book Club. A Harpo spokeswoman said yesterday, that Winfrey will announce her 64th and latest pick during a live episode airing on September 17th. That would be 14 years to the day that Winfrey announced her first book club selection, Jacqueline Machard's The Deep End of the Ocean, on September 17th, 1996. Winfrey's book club choices have vaulted to bestseller lists and instant fame. Her last choice was author Uwam Akpan's short story collection, Say You're One of Them. It's not known if Winfrey's latest pick will be her last on The Oprah Winfrey Show, which is set to premiere on its 25th and final season on September 13th.
I am actually, I am one of those guys who actually would occasionally find myself reading a book that had also been an Oprah selection. And as much as this makes me look like a superficial tool, I would always have to find the copy in the store that didn't have the Oprah Book Club thing on the front of it, which I know like doesn't matter, and I shouldn't be embarrassed of that. But it's like when you go, have you ever done this, where it's like you're picking up a copy of a book, and sometimes it's a book you've actually already read, or you're getting an additional copy because you've like lost your original copy or whatever, and you always have to find the copy of the book that doesn't have the movie cover.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
I
will not buy the paperback version of a book that has the picture from the movie on
but
it.
But there's no reason why. I mean, I do the same thing, but there's no reason why I should resist. I just
because
do.
You think when people see you reading the book,
because you care what other people think,
they'll think you're reading it because you saw the movie.
Which really, but that shouldn't matter either, right? Like, so what?
Yeah, but you want people to think that you're a reader.
But
not,
you are
not
a reader. You have a book.
Yeah.
You're reading. Don't get me wrong. I do it. I'm just saying, even in my crazy head, I understand that the logic doesn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah.
Because you are a reader. You've got the book. You're reading it. So, but that's, I did that with the corrections. But then he made it easier, though, because he actually, I think, asked for her not to put the, like, the Oprah book club thing on
right.
the front of it anyway. Because I was
that,
like,
that was a huge deal.
I got to get to the store and buy it before the Oprah seal gets put on it. And then I think he actually said, like, get bent, Oprah. And then was, like, never heard from again.
Oh, that's not true. He's actually sold really well, and he's quite critically acclaimed. And his new novel, he just came out with another novel that is just getting huge raves. It's being called, like, a masterpiece.
I dispute that he, quote, sells really well at this point, though.
For a literary novelist, he actually sells
really
well.
There's that. I'm saying he's not selling Oprah well, though.
No.
He's not going to sell corrections well.
No.
Because,
he's not selling Tom Clancy numbers.
Yeah.
But for a literary novelist, he actually sells quite well.
See, but, you know, and my whole thing is, like, F that guy. You know... Nah, never mind. I'm not just picking
Jonathan Franzen.
I'm picking a fight that's like 10 years old or something now. But I remember being really irritated at that guy. As much as I would seek out the cover of the book, probably that didn't have the Oprah thing on it.
His interviews at the time were just full of so much arrogance.
I remember
he was really annoying
and being offended. And it's like this is 10 years ago. I remember being offended then on behalf of people who had written books. And who really needed an audience for their books. And he was like, I don't need your endorsement, Oprah. So, all right. Real quickly, I should say this. We were mentioning the Rick Emerson Show, which comes up at 1 o'clock today. We're going to have Cannibal Watch, Geek Watch, and we'll do today's top five as well, which is the top five first songs from the first side of a first album. If you are a Rick Emerson Show listener, that begins a little bit after 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. If you're not, you can subscribe for the low cost of just 32 cents a day, even less, actually, if you subscribe for a year. If you are not currently a subscriber, you find you just don't have the scratch, as they say, or if there's a friend of yours who is not currently a listener. We have been offering the Emerson Grant, courtesy of our partners at New Millennium Maintenance. And New Millennium Maintenance, actually, they do landscaping maintenance and nuisance abatement solutions for your neighborhood or home. They're helping to offer the Emerson Grant, which is where we give away 10 one-month subscriptions every month to the Rick Emerson Show. So that is basically a month of free listening to the Rick Emerson Show. We've been offering the chance to do it via a YouTube submission where you create a video and you send that on in. And we've had people actually request sort of an alternate way to do it too, so they're not just sort of stuck in front of the webcam or trying to edit something together or whatever. So the alternate way, we have introduced an alternate way for you to do that, and it is this. You leave us a voicemail at the following number, 503-505-6964. That's 503-505-6964. You leave us voicemail there describing in 2 minutes or less exactly why it is that you or someone you know needs a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show. And 10 of those will be given out each month. So there you go. That is how you do that. This is Don Taylor.
If you're watching TV tonight, skip pretty much everything that's on normal TV and go for the movies. If you can handle the commercials, Titanic is on TBS at 9 p.m., starring Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio. Wonderful movie that I had never seen until forced me to watch it.
Did you just note that Titanic has Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio in it?
In case people didn't know which movie I was talking about.
Okay.
10 p.m. on Cinemax, Chinatown, one of the finest and most perfect movies ever made. Written by Robert Towne, starring Jack Nicholson, Faye Dunaway, John Huston, Chinatown. At 8 p.m. on AMC, the Western starring John Wayne, Maureen O'Hara, Stephanie Powers, McClintock.
That is actually a great film.
A great film beloved by those who adore comic Westerns and by spanking enthusiasts.
Everybody can just puzzle out at home exactly who falls into what category there.
And on Stars, the remake of The Taking of Pelham 123.
Which I never saw.
I never did either.
It's just called Pelham 123, isn't it?
It's also called The Taking of Pelham 123.
Okay.
The original is the one you actually want to see there.
Yeah, you don't want to get
the first one. But starring Walter Matthau.
And was the remake is like Travolta and Denzel Washington?
Yeah.
All right.
But I haven't actually seen it, but if you're curious, it's on.
Right.
Again, though, if you like the idea of John Wayne spanking Maureen O'Hara, McClintock.
But really, Chinatown, the appeal of Chinatown cannot be... you know what I never saw is the sequel to that. I never saw The Two Jakes.
It's all right.
The thing is,
Chinatown is just an awesome movie.
It's fantastic.
Its screenplay is actually taught in screenplay classes as being a nearly perfect screenplay.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. All right, fantastic. Did you watch the second season of Californication?
Yeah, about half of it. I just lost interest about halfway through.
For me, that was the last good season of that show. But there was this whole subplot there about a porn director who was trying to finance Vagina Town. It was pretty great. We'll go out on that. All right, there you go. Legion of News is brought to you each and every day by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer is Bruce Hagler and chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com, featuring a supplemental broadcast of the Rick Emerson Show tonight at 6 p.m. with our special interview with Megadeth, the man who is Megadeth, Dave Mustaine. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.